Welcome to Audacity Works, a podcast inspired by and dedicated to the working artist, the creative entrepreneur, and generally, doing the damn thing. This exists on the premise that the world belongs to those who have the audacity to believe that their lives have value. This is for you. Welcome to Audacity Works. I am your host, Rachel Strickland, and this is episode 10 about New Year's resolutions. Shocker. I got this request yesterday from my dear friend and audacious one, Dante Ingram. Thank you, Dante. Dante wrote, "I would love to hear your thoughts on prioritization and New Year's resolutions. I don't generally make them, but I'm constantly trying to juggle all my various responsibilities, desires, and insistent creations in my life. Since most creative people are required to split their focus, isn't that the damn truth, across multiple important areas of existence, I'm sure I'm not alone." No, you're not alone. And I do have a lot to offer on the subject. New Year's resolutions have gotten a bad rep in the last little while, and they tend to be snubbed, like, "I don't make New Year's resolutions. Nobody should make them." If New Year's resolutions work for you and they make you feel motivated and excited to do the damn thing, then you should keep doing that. And if you, like many, are finding that maybe they do make you excited, but then you just end up feeling like a loser when you can't accomplish these things and you don't have a perfect track record of honoring the promises that you've made to yourself, then that ends up not being very helpful, because then we just tend to avoid them altogether, which is the opposite of what we want. Because if nothing changes, nothing changes, and we always be wanting something to change. I used to make New Year's resolutions, and they did work for me for a while, but then I stumbled upon a little exercise that Tim Ferriss wrote about, and I've been doing that for a few years, and it's called a year in review. So the year in review is, you sit yourself down, and you get a notepad, and you open up your calendar from the past year. So open up 2022. And you divide a piece of paper into two columns, positive and negative. And you go through every week of your past year. Remember where you were, who you were with, what you were doing. And for each week, you write down people, activities, and commitments that triggered highs, like high positives, or low negatives for that month. And you put them in their respective columns. And you do this through the whole year, and then you sit back and ask yourself what 20% of each column has produced the most reliable or powerful highs, and which ones produced powerful lows. And you take this information, and then you create two lists for yourself. One is things to do, and the other is things not to do. And the reason that I like this exercise so much is, one, it does involve investigating your life and not going on autopilot. I'm real big on not going on autopilot, because autopilot can last for a very, very long time, and the consequences of that are dire. So, you know, that whole don't go back to sleep business, that's about not being on autopilot. So I like to do the do not do first, because cutting some shit out of your life that's no longer serving you is a powerful exercise in reclaiming your time, reclaiming your autonomy and your agency, and protecting your peace. And sometimes the answers that end up on the do not do this column are kind of surprising, and it's very freeing. And anytime I work with a VIP client one-on-one, one of the very first things we do is decide what is getting the axe. Because if someone comes to work with me one-on-one, they are generally like ambitious, they have a lot of gifts to give, and they're super burnt out. And they're like, how am I ever going to do all the things that I want to do with my life when I'm already super tired and I'm like 35? And the first thing I really like to do with those individuals is give things the axe. And I like that this exercise requires you to put things on the calendar. And you're like, I am not going to agree to do this shit anymore, or I'm going to get rid of it. I'm going to hand it off. It gets the axe. Another reason that I really like this exercise is that it doesn't use metrics of anything other than personal satisfaction and joy and pleasure. Like, it's custom built in favor of your joy. So not only is there a do not do this, give this the axe list, which can be very freeing, but it can also leave a void if you don't have something to put there. But it takes the things that have brought you the most joy, the most pleasure, the most positive emotions, and it's like, get these on the calendar. So that's the next bit of the job. I am going to link this in the show notes so that you can read the instructions, like in the words of the man who, I don't know if he came up with it, but he's who I heard it from, Tim Ferriss. So I will link that in the show notes. Thanks, Tim Ferriss. Met you at a party once. You were pretty freaking cool. Thanks for that. So getting things on the calendar, because I don't know about you, but for me, if it's not on the calendar, it doesn't exist. It's not going to happen. And putting your most powerfully joyful and pleasurable people, activities, commitments, even places that you've gone, getting them on the calendar already gives you things to look forward to. You already know that you're prioritizing what brings you the most joy, what brings you the most reliable sense of satisfaction. So you're prioritizing your joy and your pleasure. I think that's pretty freaking cool. So I've been doing a year in review for several years now, and I'm always a little surprised what gets the axe. Like, the first year I did it, I realized I really hate going to bars and staying out late. I'm generally just going because someone else wants me to be there, not because I want to be there. And I'm not going to do that anymore. So I stopped saying yes to those invitations, and I didn't even explain. I was just like, yeah, I don't do that anymore. And people were like, oh, okay. So you want to, like, take a walk or get a coffee or something? I mean, yeah, yes. Yes, I would like to do that. So that was my first surprise. I didn't realize that was, like, bumming me out so hard. But I just don't like doing it. I don't like staying out late. And I don't like being super drunk. And I don't like being around drunk people, you know. It's not fun for me. So I don't do it anymore. I prefer one-on-one time. Also, I can't really differentiate background sounds from the sounds of the people that I'm talking to. So if a bar is noisy, if it's anything above just like one of those nice dark Irish pubs that I do still love, then I can't hear what you're saying. So I'm going to have to ask you to repeat yourself like 3 times. It's really annoying. So that ended up squarely on the do not do list, and things that for me personally bring me a lot of satisfaction and joy are one-on-one quality time. No shocker here, quality time is my love language. So like a trip that I took with my partner or my mom, like even an hour away, just get a little inexpensive Airbnb and spend a couple days together looking around at stuff, eating shrimp, you know, whatever is gonna bring you joy, put it on the calendar. And if you don't prioritize your calendar, and I like that this uses the metric of joy as priority. Yeah, if you don't prioritize your calendar, then time will do it for you. And that's how we end up with all this busyness. And I don't have a lot of respect for busyness, because it's generally just a refusal to investigate what it is that we're doing with our time, and not wanting to endure the negative emotions associated with drawing clear boundaries. And I get that. Like, boundaries are scary, because when you say no to something, then like you can have anxiety around, like, well, I don't know, like, am I going to have FOMO? Yeah, you might have FOMO. It might be a momentary moment of discomfort. You're like, am I missing out on something? And then you get to remember that you chose this, and you chose it on purpose based on your real life experience. So then you can be free from that. But I do think it's worth talking about prioritization and procrastination. My whole life as a kid growing up, I procrastinated like, whoa. I probably still do in some areas, but a lot less now, and I will explain why. I didn't know that's what I was doing, but my mom let me know. She's like, you procrastinate. You're procrastinating so much. Why is your homework always getting done, like, the night before? I'm like, I don't know. I didn't want to do it before. She's like, but now you're all freaked out. I'm like, yeah, I'm freaked out. I don't like it. It doesn't feel good. Now, why did I procrastinate so much as a kid in school, even unknowingly, and then now as an adult, I tend not to procrastinate? I think the biggest difference is that I'm deciding what I'm doing with my time now. And as a kid, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to procrastinate writing this report on this awful book that I didn't want to read in the first place. Of course I did that. It sucked. But now, even if it's a task that it's not historically fun, like bookkeeping, I am self-employed, I run my own business, I use QuickBooks, Quick Start, and I like it. It has a big learning curve, but I get a kick out of knowing where to put things. I like the accomplishment of like putting things where they're supposed to go. And while it's not like fun to do bookkeeping, I don't procrastinate on it because I do get satisfaction out of it. Like, this is cool. Like, I'm looking at real evidence of my love and work and effort out in the world. This is like part of the reward that I get for doing that work, and I like doing it. So procrastination isn't a moral failing. I think that is really a tricky part of how we speak about procrastination, especially in productivity culture. Because it's not a moral failing. It doesn't mean that you're lazy. I'm going to say that again. It does not mean that you're lazy if you're procrastinating. Something that my partner, Manflesh, taught me a couple years ago. He's like, procrastination isn't laziness, and it's definitely not incapacity. It is generally just an unwillingness to deal and experience with the unpleasant emotions that come up when doing a certain task. So it's not like motivation is going to fix that. It's more to the tune of, if we have the skills to experience unpleasant emotions, sometimes that are very, very strong, if we have those skills, then procrastination becomes a hell of a lot less effective because we're not afraid anymore of feeling the negative emotions that surround some tasks. Like, I could definitely see how bookkeeping would be really unpleasant. For some folks, anxiety-driven. So if we can build up like the muscles around the skills of emotional management, then those things cease to be useful to us. So they just kind of fall away naturally. It's not something to focus really, really hard on. As far as I'm concerned, it's just focusing on emotional management and letting yourself feel all those things. They're not bad things. And feelings aren't facts. They're real. They're important. Emotions are both of those things. But just because we feel something doesn't make it a fact. And that's kind of a freeing thing for me, a very emotional person, to remember. Especially if I am catastrophizing. Am I saying that correctly? Anyway, if I'm having catastrophic thinking, haha, I found a way around having to learn how to say it right. If I'm having catastrophic thinking, it's very helpful for me to remember feelings aren't facts, and just because I'm feeling this doesn't make any of it actually real. I mean, it's real, but it doesn't make it true. It doesn't mean that my like doomsday predictions are accurate, and that's always very helpful for me to remember if I get into that kind of a spirally headspace. And with that said, then I don't feel the need to procrastinate, especially because I like doing the things that I do with my life, even the boring stuff. So let's talk about prioritization from like a tools-based perspective, because there is a little tool that I use sometimes. I don't use this all the time. I only use it if, you know, those times when everything sort of starts to intersect. You're like, hi, I have 5 major things happening at the same time. I don't like it. I am using way too much mental energy to try and keep track of all of these things, and all 5 of these things are important. At times like that, I rely heavily on writing things down. I really like lists, and once something is written down, I can stop using the mental energy of trying to constantly remember it. That's exhausting. Our energy and our mental focus is a finite resource. Like, it does renew if you get enough sleep and rest and recovery, but we can't just be treating ourselves like we're machines all the time. I know, and this is a term that I got from one of my favorite internet crushes, Ramit Sethi, personal finance guru. He also writes a lot about psychology. And one of my favorite quotes from him is, "We are cognitive misers." That, he hit the nail on the head. I am such a cognitive miser. I know that I don't have infinite mental focus, power, and energy. So I know I need to be very choosy with where I use that. And knowing that allows me to dole out my time sparingly. Like, my first answer to most questions is no, because I love the word no. I do have a tendency to overcommit myself, to double book myself, and I really, really dislike it when I do that. So I've learned to just say no, sit with something, even an invitation that sounds really fun. Like, okay, no, let me get back to you. Think about it. Make a choice. Make it based on my own metrics of success. And then I can be like, okay, I've decided yes. That's how I handle it anyway. But the tool that I was talking about is called the Eisenhower Matrix. This is for when you have like the 5 major life events and important things intersecting at the same time, and they're all requiring your energy. The Eisenhower Matrix, I'll put a link in the show notes. It involves, again, writing stuff down, and you make a graph. I am so sorry. I am recording this at 8:30 a.m. because we're about to leave to go visit my partner's family in Tennessee and Kentucky. So I'm like, I really want to get this done. So that's what I'm doing. And if I'm not fully awake, then forgive me, because I just forgot the word graph. You draw, and I'm leaving all of this in, by the way. You draw a graph on a piece of paper, just like cut into 4 quadrants. And I'm going to let the link in the show notes really get into the nitty gritty, because like I said, I don't use the Eisenhower Matrix frequently, but when I do, it's been really helpful, because it has you divide your tasks into urgent tasks, important tasks, and there's a mix, like important but not so urgent, urgent and important, less important, less urgent, and then it allows you to think of those tasks in terms of do this first, schedule this for later, delegate this to someone else, and do not do this. Once again, we have the do not do list, and I really, really like that. So it gives us back our time. So yes, for more on the Eisenhower Matrix and how to use it, I'll put that into the show notes. Lots of stuff in the show notes today. I like it. But just on a personal note, New Year's is a really weird time. When I lived in Seattle and I worked and basically lived at Emerald City Trapeze Arts, and my good friend Gary Kirkland and I, he owned the school and ran it then with his partner Carrie Kirkland, and we were getting ready for the New Year's party, and we always had a show and a big like rager, and it was always fun, but it was always weird. And we just looked at each other one day and he was like, "New Year's is weird." I'm like, I agree. New Year's is weird. People put so much arbitrary pressure on this occasion, and everyone's like, Happy New Year. And I like that sentiment. Like, I hope you're happy on the new year. I hope you have a happy new year. But also when you're hearing it constantly, you're like, are you having a happy new year? Are you happy? You should be happy right now. And I dislike anyone telling me how I should feel, especially in home decor, like live, laugh, love, live life to the fullest, like decor like that. I don't like it. I don't want that in my house. But anyway, moral of the story is that New Year's can be a pretty weird time. I think people are already exhausted from the holidays, especially if they've had like all the busyness that comes with that, and there wasn't enough on the do not do list, and maybe we weren't prioritizing ourselves and what we need very well during that time. So just taking the pressure off of this completely arbitrary holiday is good for us. And what I like about it is that I get to do my New Year review, which I can do any day. Like, you can have a New Year's Eve 365 days a year. You can have a New Year's Eve whenever you want, and you can make choices and be like, I ain't doing this anymore. And you know what? I'm going to put this thing on the calendar because it will get crowded out by bullshit if I don't. Like, you are free to do that at all times. But we tend to do it around January 1st. And I don't mind that. I like having collective experiences when I know that other people are in similar headspaces. But if you can, just take the pressure off of this day. Try to enjoy yourself with people that have made you feel supported, respected, who've made you laugh. And that's where it's at, right? I don't know where I'll be. I'll have to report later. I'll be somewhere cold. And I'll be with my partner and his family. And I don't know what we're doing. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what we're doing. I know at some point I'm going to draw the cards for Woo Corner. If you don't know what Woo Corner is, I have a tarot deck. And I read tarot. And every year in December, I pull a card specifically for the readers of my mailing list for every month of the year. And then near the beginning of a month, I'll send out Woo Corner and be like, this was the card that I drew for this month. And I love the responses that I get from Woo Corner. It frequently is a lot of like, oh, this is uncanny. Why is this? Like, I don't know. But I love doing it, and I especially love that I get to hear from so many of my readers afterwards. So if you want to get on that, it will come out shortly after January 1st, and I will put, again, that link in the show notes. Would love to have you there. It is the most reliable way of getting to hear from me, especially if, like, Instagram implodes tomorrow. Yeah, I hope that doesn't happen, because I would lose touch with a lot of people that I like a lot. So get on your people's mailing lists that have them. In the show notes, please join me. I would love to have you play in the sandbox. And it's also a great way to write in. Like, Dante sent me this email yesterday requesting that this be the subject of a podcast. And I'm like, yeah, I want to do that. I want to do that right now at 8:30 a.m. the day that we are leaving for Tennessee. So I did. And if you have any requests for future episodes, would love to hear about them, would love to hear from you. You can reach me, you can respond to any of my newsletters. You can reach me on Instagram at Rachel Strickland Creative or on Patreon at Rachel Strickland Creative. Thank you so much for listening to me today, for being here, for having my voice in your ear for a little bit. And I do hope you have a happy new year. And I hope that it brings you some clarity. That is another thing that I do every year. Like, I choose a word for myself. Because I like simplicity. And having, like, one word, guess what 2023 is? Clarity. I want that. That is what I want. So I wish you clarity. I wish you joy. I wish you pleasure. Thank you so much for being here. Don't go back to sleep.